This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 710, brought to you by Marvels, a new podcast from Marvel and Stitcher. Learn more at marvelspodcast.com. And Daybreak, the only podcast left. Whether you're a fan of the show Daybreak or you love learning how to survive in a teen-filled post-apocalyptic world, you're going to need to subscribe to Netflix's first fictional podcast. And iFanboy listeners like you.
Police walk in for Jimmy Jazz. I said he ain't here, but he sure went past. Oh, you're looking for Jimmy Jazz. Yeah, they say, strapped to my Sagana for Jimmy Dread. Cut off his gears and chop off his head. Police come look for Jimmy Jazz. Jazz.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 710. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Who is his own teen-filled post-apocalyptic world in a way.
What does that mean?
I don't know. If you just let it go, everyone listening would have been like, what does that mean? To just think about it forever. And like a year and a half, hey, so one time you said this, and I was like, I just said a ridiculous thing. Oh, I really can't let it go. Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are a fanboy, and we mess with your head a little bit. Every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, maybe some listener mail if we have time. It will be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There will be spoilers. Exercise some caution. We got a lot to get through today. Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and it was a week where I kept enlarging my pull list. Every time I forgot that book. And suddenly I had like over 20 books again. But when I read Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 5, I was like, well, I don't know how anything's going to beat this. And nothing did. This is the pick of the week. Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber. This is the third time out of 5 books that this has been pick of the week. And this issue is focused on Jimmy's adventures in Gotham. Because see, that's where he escaped from the Metropolis, living in that rundown hotel. And here we have a lot of this particular team, this particular book's take on Batman. There is a story here, and there's a story with the Jimmy Olsen family, the Olsen family and the Luther family in the past, but really it's almost like a bunch of skits. And here we have Bruce Wayne on a date with a 22-year-old influencer who doesn't really care about him. So he admits he's Batman to her, and that was great. And then there's Jimmy on the roof with Superman and Batman. Batman does not want a civilian involved in this adventure. And then there's Jimmy, my favorite Jimmy, which is Jimmy the YouTube star, Timmy Olsen, who is dealing with this guy who builds comically oversized props for people. And there was a great joke in there that was sort of casually thrown off that there are many of them in Gotham.
Yeah.
Not when there's so many of us. And then there's more with the Joker prank with the mini Jokers, and we see the fallout of that. And then there's Batman's ennui about he's also funny in the Batcave, which was great. And then there's a funeral. And then we flash back. There's just a lot of different vignettes, as this book has been. And then we see some more of Jimmy with his, or Jimmy and his sister, who I don't think we've met before. But it reminds me so much of Justice League from the 80s, which was not vignette or skit based, but was very overtly funny and also featured versions of the characters that didn't fit their other books. So, like, I could see people complaining this Batman is ridiculous, and he is, and that's what makes it funny. And the Batman in that Justice League book in the 80s also wasn't the Batman in the other books either. It's just, this is a different, a very different take on the DC universe.
I can see myself in the past complaining about that kind of thing, but now I do find it delightful. There's, I think my favorite panel in the whole thing was the page before he says, I'm also hilarious. He drives the Batmobile through one of the panels, and there's just an old man shaking his fist at the Batmobile. And I really liked the subtlety of that gag. Mm-hmm. And once you see where that sort of Batman is funny one is going, it's just a two-pager, I think.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're really going through with this. And I like, you know, that
Alfred has spent $85,400 paying people to laugh at his jokes.
See, and you might think that's ridiculous. And if so, you've never actually worked with the personalities in Hollywood, is what I would tell you. And then, like I know that a couple issues ago, I was like, okay, he's getting too far afield. And I was kind of bitchy. I may have been in a mood that week. I don't know. Because this time when I read Mr. Jimberly and Jimmy, Mr. Jimberly Jimmington Olsen, I kept laughing at it. Jimberly Jimmington. I was like, I don't know how you're getting away with this on a professional level, because I say things like this all the time, but good on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny and weird and wacky, which is usually anathema to comic fans. They want their deadly serious superheroes. But I laughed so much reading this issue.
Yeah.
And this, as we talked about, Steve Lieber is so good at this. That scene with Bruce on his date, it's an 8-panel grid, and just the body language is so terrific in that. So there's like 5 word balloons. The rest of it's all body language, and it's great. You see his boredom. You see her boredom. You see him saying, ah, fuck it, I'm Batman. She's like, wait, what?
So when he orders another drink there, is he getting a ginger ale?
Who knows?
Further, I was thinking about this. This is unrelated to anything. Ginger ale is it may as well be a Coke or a Pepsi. I don't feel
like
he's
drinking.
But it looks
like whiskey.
I know, but I don't think he's drinking much of that.
You mean like the sugar?
Yeah.
Well,
he's keeping it. Well, this goes back to our question: is he in optimum physical condition, or is he just gifted? I mean, he's burning it off, but I'm guessing the sugar. It doesn't matter. It's not the point. He doesn't want to drink, which I think is funny. Like he says, like, give me a drink, and I was like, oh, that's actually not about getting wasted.
Yeah. And again, you can't really talk about the story because, you know, quite frankly, this story's, to me, not that important.
I think there is a story, though.
There is one, but it's very subtle and in the background.
I mean, he has a real chance. I can't believe there's only 5 issues so far. But he's got a real chance that if it was structured really well, to sort of come together in a real thing, and that will be the gold medal.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to have this be super entertaining and turn it page to page, but if it actually turns out to be a whole piece, which I assume is the plan, and if it doesn't land completely, it's not the biggest thing in the world, because a lot of comics don't land. that's sort of the game. But if he does, if he pulls it together, you know, like Mark Russell tends to, it's already is special, but it'll be extra special.
But your boy Timmy loves comical novelty props. It's all weirdly big. it's funny.
You know what's funny is that Lieber, we've known Lieber forever, and we don't know him. I don't know him. I wouldn't, if I saw him, he wouldn't recognize me or anything like that. I don't know him. That's not what I'm saying. We know his work for a really long time. Have been aware, have been fans, and for a long time it was just like, this guy is criminally underrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting with Superior Foes of Spider-Man with Nick Spencer, I think, they started this act, this funny thing, you know, which actually probably was allowable because of Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, you know, like that sort of tone, which is interesting. And now I'm like, I'm glad I get to see his work all the time. And I think he's really good at it. I'm like, I would like, you know, he doesn't just have to do funny. He doesn't have to just be the funny guy. This is like, you know, Darwin used to complain that, oh, I'm now the nostalgia guy, the cartoon guy.
Yep.
Like Steve Lieberg, like he could do everything else too.
Great. I mean, that original, the old Whiteout stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, almost 20 years
not
old.
Not funny.
Point. Not funny at all. And he's a great crime, you know, artist. I would love for him to do like a Brubaker book or something, you know, but like, at least he's getting work, and it's higher and higher profile work. I don't know how well this sells, but if this is, you know, a Superman book in the middle of a Superman renaissance, so.
And I assume it's fun.
Yeah,
I'm sure this is a ton of fun to do. So maybe I hope he's doing what he wants. I hope that this is the thing, and it shows on the page. It certainly seems like he does. But what a book! What a beautiful
book. And with a book like this, he gets to do a lot of different kind of things. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets to do like old 1800s clothing and costumes and the flashback stuff. He gets to do like subtle body language work. He gets to do big action pieces. Crazy set pieces and so there's a lot of different kinds of storytelling going on here,
and he doesn't have to live in one place the whole time,
right?
You know, so that's probably, I don't know, that's either hard to it depends on the artist, but it's like
his Batman's really great.
Yes. I mean, true,
he could have very easily have drawn Greg Rucka's Batman run, you know, or detective run
100%
in the early 2000s. I mean, that's the kind of style he's got.
His Clark Kent is also excellent.
Right.
Oh, he's so good. and also just Nathan Fairbairn's doing a great job.
It's a good looking book. Looks.
It's perfect. The coloring is perfect for what it needs to be. Also, I always think that scenes where someone gets covered in comic book blood every time, it's happened to Jimmy several times. And I think it's very funny every time.
Right. So there is some, I mean, what is your take on what the story is then?
I mean, there's something.
It seems to exist in the funeral scene and then in the flashback to the past.
So Luther's family and Jimmy's family had some sort of epic problem in the past, and we're going through understanding that, whether it's like a Hatfield McCoy thing or whatever. And that is leading to a situation where Jimmy is convinced that Luther is trying to kill him.
Right.
And I think that the earlier story, the origin story, will resolve in such a way that if I had to predict, it would be that it is not what it seems. And then in the future, it will be not what it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it'll be like his brother or something. Who knows?
Well, his brother looks very upset that Jimmy Olsen is still alive in that one final page of the middle scene. So
it's an embarrassment to the family kind of thing.
It's almost like an old comic book style storytelling, you know, like a Silver Age style, that where you had different short stories, or even Golden Age, actually more Golden Age style, where you had different short stories inside the issue. And it's just masterfully done. And we've mentioned it every time with these picks, like, you know, we aren't the biggest Matt Fraction fans in the world. We've liked stuff he's done for sure, but we've also really disliked stuff he's done, and we've also been, you know, blasé about stuff he's done. But he's really working here.
I love it if you sort of flip through the pages and you see the color palette change from bit to bit. Like there's the Batcave has like a complete grayish greenish color thing, and then you switch, and then you're out in the funeral, and the sky changes, and you can tell which part. Then you switch to, you know, Jimberly Jimmington Olsen, and that's a whole different thing going on. So just visually, you're like, oh, we moved along.
And then you turn that page with all the Jokers, and just this pop of purple.
Yep.
It's
so perfect. People talk a lot about, you know, well, people can't appreciate colorists or letters, which is not the case for us. But this is one of those things like, you could, the wrong colorist could ruin this.
Mm-hmm.
Ruin it and ruin Steve Lieber. And that's not happening at all.
Did you read Batman White Knight Presents Von Freeze?
Nope.
Another Black Label entry. This was a one shot. And we were just talking about Klaus Janson recently. I don't remember why we were.
Inking.
It may have been off the show. But this was written by Sean Murphy and drawn by Klaus Janson. And this is a one shot that ties into the Batman White Knight books that Sean Murphy's doing. This actually ties into the first miniseries. But it was really good. It's an oversized, like, it's like a 56 page or so book. And I'll get to the story in a second, but again, with the end of the book essay. But this was really interesting because so in the first miniseries, we met Von Fries, who was, you know, basically Mr. Fries, who was the researcher who was working with Thomas Wayne, and there was some nebulous Nazi ties. So the whole story is about how he started developing cryo technology in Germany before the Nazis, and the Nazis rise to power. His Jewish partner is in trouble, so he tries to hide him in the factory. And then Von Fries has to join the SS to keep getting funding, and it spirals out of control, as it did for many people. And so this is all about that.
So he's like Von Braun.
Von Braun, yeah, basically. And so the essay in the back, it's just a short one. It's not a long one. He basically says, Sean Murphy says that he was having brunch with Klaus Janson. They were talking about a project, and they got talking about their families. And Klaus Janson is German, you know, his family's German, and his family fled Germany during the war. And he said, I've never actually done a story about World War II or set in World War II. Huh. And so this came out of that conversation. And it's interesting. And I mean, there's a lot. I mean, Hitler's in it. Himmler's in it. It's a lot. It's very, it's all in there. So it's basically a World War II story. You're just putting in the layer of cryo technology into it. But it's basically about a scientist who has to deal with the Nazis, the rise of the Nazis, getting there, you know, dealing with the SS and hiding his friend's family. And then that goes wrong. And there's an escape and goes wrong. And then there's a really harrowing double page spread where, and they talk about the essay, how this was the hardest thing to draw was the experimenting on, you know, captured Jews in the cryo tanks. And there's, you know, it's a big double page spread. And then it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I just went through that. Boy, this is a guy who doesn't get enough credit.
Klaus Janson?
Janson.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, it's always apparent when I look through his work, like, how much of the visual stuff from Dark Knight Returns he's really responsible for.
He molded the art style into something very, very Frank, very, very Frank Miller, but also very different.
That first page looks like Steve Dillon as inked by Klaus Janson.
it was really enjoyable. I really liked this. It felt, you know, more like a war story almost than anything. And I think you would like it. It does look like Steve Dillon. You're right.
Whenever you have a bald white man with a downturned face, right, straight on, that's...
It does look like him. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was. I like this kind of story where if you're doing like an alternate take, so you put them into real history, and you know, Von Fries is interesting as this kind of,
sure,
you know, ex Nazi scientist character.
Man. You want to talk about Von Braun for a while? Because I could. I have thoughts.
No. And he ends up helping Bruce Bruce be born because he's really early. So they use the freeze technology to slow down her pregnancy, her birth. And
oh wow,
yeah, it was interesting. I didn't expect so much Hitler. Honestly, I was like, whoa. But
he was very hands on.
If you like that the White Knight story, if you find, you know, World War II history interesting, you can totally read this without having read the other White Knight books too, by the way. And if you're a Klaus Janson fan, if you like those classic guys who don't work so much, he still got it.
Absolutely.
He still got it.
I read Marauders too.
I thought you would. You liked it.
I did. Did I?
Yes.
All right. I thought maybe I wouldn't, but I actually really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than the first issue. I thought it made more sense.
What's interesting about it is, so I don't know if this is something that happened in another X book we're just not aware of, but what is up with Kitty? She clearly has a problem. She is drinking all the time. She is being extra brutal to her opponents, and she's now getting really ugly tattoos.
Yes. And also, to further reference Matt Fraction and David Aja's Hawkeye, she has a bandage on her nose all the time now. Which is now a comic book signal that you're going off the rails a little bit.
I mean, her tattoo is not as bad as Pyro's face skull tattoo, but
I liked that they went big on that with him. I thought that was funny. Like, he was excited. I like it's a very silly idea, and that character doesn't really matter all that much.
No.
And also, life doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. And the artist is like, great, now I just have to write some black there. You've saved me time.
I just make a little X.
Yeah. I mean, having all these questions about phasing. Yeah, no, she's acting out for sure.
And why is the question? I mean, I don't know the answer.
She's I'm hoping there is. That same tattoo is from... I can respect, I can get behind the, well, this is very silly.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, no sacred cows kind of thing. And she's got a pirate jacket on and the tattoo from that the guy has from Master and Commander. So that is funny. Like, you're leaning into the pirate thing. Okay.
And she's the new Red Queen in the Hellfire Club.
And I don't really understand all that Hellfire Club stuff, but I really did like the dynamics of the scene between Sebastian Saw and Emma Frost.
It was a Chris Claremont sex thing.
Yes, I know, but like, what does that mean today? Or what, you know, like, I get it. It's a whole thing, but... and then it was, I did notice that this team, this Marauders, super powerful team.
Yeah.
Between Storm and Kitty and Iceman, like those are, they've, or at least they have made those into those Omega level people over this time.
Right.
So you got a lot of heavy hitters, and then you had very funny scenes with Batroc the Leaper. Maybe at least please have some refreshment from the Tubbs bar. No, we drank all of it. Okay. Like, there, she's a pirate though. All of the things that, if she's going to be a pirate, all the weird things she's doing fit with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's fun. Who cares?
It's just, there's got to be a reason, though. And I'm looking forward to finding out. Hopefully, I'm hoping it didn't happen in some other book and I don't know about it. I'm hoping that they'll slowly reveal why she's so.
I feel like that's the point.
You think so? I don't know. What is Bishop's power?
I don't know. I think he's powerful, too.
I don't know what his power is.
Gateway.
That's
right now, I don't think Ron listens to the show anymore, but if he was listening right now, he'd be going out of his skull.
Bishop is in that time period of X-Men where I just sort of checked out.
Yeah.
That whole 90s where I was like, everybody's stupid.
That was when I tried to read it, and I couldn't. I was like, I don't know what this is.
I also like the art a lot.
I do too.
This is a new artist, but we talked a lot about new artists and Marvel especially, who may not be up to snuff, and there's going to be some on the show later on, but man, he's good.
Matteo Lali with colored by Federico Blay.
To Blave.
I was behind a car the other day, and the license plate literally was To Blave, and I was like, wow, that's specific. I've never seen something like that. My wife was delighted by it.
I'm sure.
Yes, To Blave.
All right, here we go. Bishop's power absorbs all forms of radiant and conductive energy and directs them out. That was basically everybody's power in the 90s.
What does radiant energy mean?
I guess, like, it's just in the atmosphere, it's just being radiated as opposed
radiation?
To conductive. I guess.
Radiation would be that then, right? So it seems like he'd be quite useful.
It's the same power that fucking Gambit has. It's all the same,
right?
Nebulous absorb radiation and shoot it back out power. Right. That's stupid. Give me a concrete power. Give me a fixes plants.
Hold on. Anyway, type that down.
Also, I don't have any patron powers ready to go, so I'm in trouble.
Me neither.
So yeah, I this is really good. You know, some of the other X-Men books I haven't stuck with, but this one is good. I liked it. I liked the art. I liked the whole Hellfire Club backdrop. Kitty is super interesting right now, and the team is fun, and they've got a fun boat with a gunboat with giant cannons on it. So
that is good. It makes more sense than a little sailboat she stole. This is better.
But I kind of like the idea of them going from boat to boat,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, constantly having to steal boats.
Sure,
but
yeah, hey. I mean, like, if I was writing this, well, I'm not, and like, but I would destroy that boat like first page in the next issue, just to fuck with expectations.
I just
like
to
that would be
cannon.
The thing, like standing on a little raft and it's sinking. Like, well, that was fast. And just
yeah. It's good. It's good. I mean, I'm not quite sure where we're going with X-Men right now, but it's good.
As long as I can pick and choose, I'm happy. If I have to, if it all decides to do one big story, I'm gonna bail fast.
Right. I understand. And I wouldn't necessarily be far behind you.
We didn't put it on the rundown, but I had enjoyed Excalibur last week, and this week I was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
that I was like, maybe not.
Fair enough.
Captain America 16. What was funny about this was, I open it up. There's a little, you know, there's a little cold open with the Kingpin and the Lucan woman.
Yeah, who looks like Sharon, by the way.
Because she's just a random blonde woman. Yep. So she's like,
and
oh.
Sharon's old now. And I was like, well, maybe that's why, because they had too many random blondes.
So I get to the title page, and it's by Ta-Nehisi Coates and somebody named Bob Quinn. I was like, I don't know who the fuck Bob Quinn is. And the thing about this book is they keep putting random artists on it because there's not, there hasn't really been a consistent artist to the whole, because Lenil Francis Yu started on it, and we all know that wasn't going to last. So I was like, I don't know who this Bob Quinn dude is. So I kept reading. I'm like, this art looks really familiar. And then I was like, wait a minute. Bob Quinn is Bob Q.
Yeah.
So clearly he didn't get to keep his nom de plume at Marvel for some reason, even though it's weird because a lot of people working at Marvel use fake names.
Or you know, like he'd done it as a thing and didn't expect, you know, to go anywhere. This is like Dennis Hopeless. He's like, maybe I'll actually just go by my name now.
Either way, I thought this was really fun. John Walker, the U.S. agent, showed up, and I put a picture of that on Instagram, and there's something about that costume, because that whole storyline with the captain where Steve Rogers once again relinquished the role of Captain America because that's all they can do with him, and he became the captain with that black suit. Man, that stuck with me emotionally. So when that reveal happened, I was like, ooh, the black suit.
That black suit came out right when I started to read comics, and I thought it was the coolest looking thing I'd ever seen. I like genuinely, and not too long ago, I actually read the 4-issue Mark Gruenwald U.S. Agent miniseries, like over the last year at some point, which just randomly I was like, oh, I want to read this. And I downloaded it and I read the whole thing. And it's all about him hunting Scourge. So this was very tied into that. And I think Ta-Nehisi Coates is pretty much in our age range. So he would have read that too.
Yeah, and he's definitely been mining that era. We've had Bernie show up. We've had Diamondback. Like, yep. He's definitely mining that Gruenwald era for sure, which is the smart thing to do because that's one of the best eras of Captain America.
That's true. However, I have been sticking with this Captain America the whole time, waiting for something. And what I've come up with is that I think it's a little boring. I don't think it's very good. Or at least it's not entertaining. Like, it's not, like, technically bad. It's not, like, you know, when a novelist or a writer comes along and can't make comic books like he can, but it is missing something that makes it fun. It's not fun. Other than the thrill of, hey, it's John Walker, U.S. agent, who the last time I saw was in Jeff Parker, who did James Bond with Bob Q.
Bob Quinn.
First time I heard of him. It was Jeff Parker's Thunderbolts when he was running the prison. And he was in a wheelchair, or he had robot legs or something.
Right.
And this guy's different. This is Gruenwald's. This is Gruenwald's John Walker.
Yeah.
However, the other thing that I got out of it was like, all right, we're still dealing with the Hydra thing.
That's the thing I forgot to mention when I said, looking at the title page, every month, even though, you know, we're deep into this, I go, oh, right, we're still dealing with the fucking Secret Invasion thing. Like, I keep forgetting. It's like a Groundhog Day. I keep forgetting this. We're still doing it. And it doesn't matter, ultimately, because ultimately every book is its own island, but it does not fit Captain America in any other comic Captain America's in.
And also, I mean, this was the
He's not dealing with this in any of their books. People aren't running from him in fear in other books. Like, it doesn't fit. And it's, again, it doesn't really matter, but it's just like...
Well, it does matter, because at the beginning of that, I thought, oh, God, we're going to be dealing with this forever. And we still are, and I don't want to. Like, I wanted it to, like, I was happy when it was over. I want it to be over now. I like Nick Spencer's work a ton. That did not work for me. And the fact that we are still, like, dealing with it in this book, like, I just want to leave it in the past because it's not
interesting. And this is decompressed, you know, storytelling. Yeah. Is this monthly?
Yeah. I think so.
It's monthly. So we're doing about 16 months now of this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, everything else is moving at the speed of light because they're coming out twice a month. It just feels like this has been happening for a long time, and there's not really – we're not heading towards any kind of resolution.
Yeah, I know it's thoughtful, but it feels like we're chopping wood basically. Yeah. And I don't care. Like we're still dealing with like Lucan is like – it's been a year and a half, dude.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's not quite. Yeah. So I don't know that I'm ready to quit because I really want it to work, and I feel like there's a lot of right pieces here. But I feel like I want to be entertained more.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that for sure.
Speaking of entertainment,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you and us by Daybreak, the only podcast left. Whether you're a fan of Daybreak or you love learning how to survive in a teen-filled post-apocalyptic world, you're going to mm-hmm. need to subscribe to this new Netflix podcast. It's called The Only Podcast Left, and it's Netflix's first fictional podcast. It's set in a world of Daybreak, written by showrunner Aaron Collette, starring Tessa Netting, Kyle Sherman, Kimia Bipornia, and Jared Goldstein. Also, I'm sorry, Kimia, about what I just did to your last name. Maybe.
Bipornia.
Meet your hosts, the AV Club. They're a group of kids who survived the apocalypse by using their skills to rig cameras and spy on warring tribes all over Glendale, which also has a lot of car dealerships. I don't know if they're still open after the apocalypse.
Well, maybe teens don't want to, well, who knows?
I bought a Volkswagen in Glendale once. There were no warring tribes that's not true. and now they're making a show about it while juggling their own personal drama, because teens, and trying to stay alive as mutant pugs, ghoulies, and a mysterious new tribe all try to kill their vibe. Meet members of the LARP Lords, Donut Hose.
Well, I got a whole question about them when you're done reading the names.
STEM punks and more in their Tribe Spotlight segment. And this podcast
Before we get to that, we talked about last time how Donut Hose is my favorite name, and I would definitely join the Donut Hose if they would have me.
Uh-huh.
Do you think they're seasonal? Do you think like now they're getting into like the apple cider donut hose? Do you think like, you know, they offer different vibes?
I think you have to do that. I mean, you have to have your stable items. You got to have your glazes. You got to have your, you know, chocolate frosted, things like that. But yeah, I mean, you can't just sit on your laurels. You got to do apple cider donut time. You got to do, you know, the fall harvest stuff. I don't know what the spring donuts would be. I have to think about that. But yeah, no, they should switch them around for sure.
Okay. Like they should change the whole look for the winter?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You want to go with more white sprinkles kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
This podcast, like the one you're listening to, is full of spoilers, so make sure that you watch the whole show on Netflix, Daybreak, before pressing play on the podcast, and you might just find out what happens after the end of Daybreak Season 1. Featuring Daybreak cast member Austin Kroot in a special guest appearance as Wesley Fists of Fury. The Only Podcast Left is available now on Spotify. Go listen to that.
Batman 83, Tom King, Michael Jenin, and I saw a lot of people having very emotional reactions to this issue, and a lot of people assume this would be the pick of the week, but we've talked about this. I'm just emotionally disconnected from this storyline.
You're certainly not going to be affected by another Alfred getting killed.
Yeah, I mean, the City of Bane, I even liked it. My favorite part of this whole run has been the interlude of the wedding stuff, and that sort of pushed the City of Bane stuff to the side. I'm not really into it. Not into this, you know, Thomas Wayne from Flashpoint. I just haven't felt connected to it. And I think there's been a lot of starts and stops. There's been a lot of – the scheduling has caused lots of disruption so that – if you do start to get into it, suddenly there's a side story because we have to have the artist catch up and, he killed Alfred. Do I believe he's really going to be dead for, you know, quote unquote good? No.
Are you absolutely considering this as like an Elseworlds thing? Because I think I am, and that's one of the ways I'm able to get through it.
I don't know. I just, you know. Also, I don't know that Michael Janin's the artist you want on a really emotional issue.
He does
fighting really well, but he doesn't really do face acting really well.
I think you're right. And I saw Tom say something about, you know, like, oh, he's the Batman guy for now. And I was like, I don't know. Like, he's great. I think he does things really good, but I don't know that it's my favorite thing. I will just go on the other side. I enjoy this, actually. And if I think of it separately and I don't think of it like this is Batman, then I can even go along with the Thomas Wayne stuff because I think that stuff is, I mean, it's absolutely ripe for drama, and I like the fact that it seems to be a threat. Like, Thomas Wayne is an actual scary.
He's a meaner Batman.
Yeah. And he's just as capable, and that's sort of fraught. And I like that. I the bit where, like, all right, now let's do it. Like the cliffhanger at the end of the issue, I find it much more compelling than Alfred being dead, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how you had to get there. Fine, whatever. But I can't think of it. But if I then think of that, this is in the regular sort of DC universe, Earth 2 or whatever, I don't buy it.
Right.
Because I know that it won't count. But if I separate myself from that, and it's sort of a very long chess match that this whole thing is, I'm cool. I can go along with it and I can enjoy it.
Right.
I think.
It's certainly not bad.
No.
I just feel almost disconnected from it. And, yeah. You know, if Alfred can lose a hand and have it mysteriously reappear, he can come back from the dead. And I'm because part of me, because of the way things work, if they were like killing off Alfred, and I say this with air quotes, mm-hmm. it would have been in the New York Times.
Sure.
You know, like he's a character your grandmother knows. And DC will take any opportunity to publicize that if that's the case. And I just don't believe that. I mean, he's got a show. I don't know if people watch it. I don't even know what channel it's on, but if they were really killing off Alfred.
That's where we're at, by the way. I would put, you got to be top 10 Alfred fans in the world. And he's got a show and you're like, I don't know.
Well, I know it's a channel I don't get. That's so I don't right. even, I don't worry about it because I can't Still. Even watch it if I want to. I just don't, who knows? I just don't feel connected to this storyline.
That's
a bummer.
I think that's fair. I am actually enjoying it. I'm not, but I definitely take it as a separate thing because otherwise all the air goes out of it, you know?
So here's what's weird about The Amazing Mary Jane number 2, which is written by Leah Williams and drawn by Carlos Gomez, is that the entire issue basically is about trying to find funding for a movie.
It's stressful.
I mean, it is stressful, and I went through that for a whole year, but like, don't expect it in a superhero comic. It literally is the funding gets pulled from their movie about Mysterio that Mysterio is secretly directing. And so they have to literally go around town trying to get money from first money people, movie money people, then from like Captain Britain and tech people, and then from like a sketchy car dealer guy in Van Nuys. And, That's literally 80% of the issue is this. And then they get some money. It's not enough. It's not their blockbuster budget, but they get enough. They can now do it as an indie art house movie. And then at the very end, the real Secret Six, Savage Six, whatever they're called, shows up. And they're like, "Ooh, you're making a movie about us?" And that was the cliffhanger. So like Vulture and Rhino and Tarantula, Scorpion. But literally the whole issue is about it's about meetings. it was weird.
Did you like it?
I liked it. I liked it. Yeah, it's because it's bizarre.
Yeah, sure.
Like, all right, we're gonna do this. All right,
Does it ring true with your entertainment industry experience?
Well, I'm not at that level of the major blockbuster, but it sure.
I mean, you know enough though that like, oh, this is somebody who's never has no idea.
No. She Leah Williams has clearly had some experience in the film industry. Or at least knows people in the film industry because
I've read the books
from the onset behavior of people and crew and stuff to the meetings with finance people. It's pretty much in there.
Cool.
So she's either very familiar with it or has been involved in it somehow.
All right.
Yep.
That's a fun time. A couple of Image books I wanted to catch up on. I'm going to switch the order on these right now. I'm going to talk about Crowded number 10. Crowded took a little bit of a break. I'm a big fan of this book. I've enjoyed it the whole way too. I can't believe there's only 10 issues. This double shipping thing has screwed me all up.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things like it has not remained entirely consistent, but it is better planned out than a lot of the books that sort of come and go and disappear. They say, all right, we're doing for this many. We're taking a break. We'll come back. It's the thing. Like, I get that. And that makes sense. That's how you have to work. This is the one that 10 issues in, this makes it sound even sooner, the two lead characters, the girl who's on the run and the bodyguard, hook up.
Hmm.
And they have
high-stress, sexy situations.
Yes. Feels soon. I feel like they hated each other in the last issue. Or I mean, it's been happening. I feel like they jumped to it. And then in this one, I was a little annoyed. And it's like they were just making out the whole time. Mm. And it was kind of, I get it. Like you made your point. I know it's edgy. They're two girls. It's futuristic, you know. But felt like a big turn for a story that we haven't gone far enough into yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it felt slightly unearned or whatever. I still like the book. I love how it looks. I love how the characters are drawn. I do think that it is it's edgy in a way that works a lot of times, not all the time, but you know, it's like a lot of times you're I mean, God, I hate sounding like this, but people are trying to shove diversity in your face in a way that it doesn't feel organic. And in this book, it really does feel organic most of the time. Because it's a slightly futuristic world and you know that people's standards and you know, ideas have changed about what is normal or what is acceptable. It felt a little purposeful here, which I don't mm-hmm. always love. But it's a great book. I really do like these characters. And it's hard to keep up the pace that they have, I think. So it was almost like a little bit of a breather here, which I can also understand, but didn't quite sit, kind of bumped on it. Also out was Heart Attack number one from people I've never heard of, such as writer Sean Kittleson and artist Eric Zadowski mm-hmm. and colorist Michael Garland. I have heard of Letterver Piperso. I have heard yes. of that. When you do this show, Connor and I are intimately familiar with letterers. We're like, oh, there's a new guy. but, you know, it actually helps. I'm like, oh, real letterers on this. That means they give a shit. I read this because I figured there was a chance it was going to be patron pick. But also because I it didn't look entirely.
Well, I read it too because I was looking at the New Image books and I was like, well, that right. that actually looks like it's got
yes
something to it. So I did read it. And my big takeaway was that Eric Zadowski is got a very much of a Philip Bond vibe to him, and okay. he's clearly clearly talented. Yes. We've seen a lot of artists who are not
new.
Talented, but also clearly early in his career because like
yeah.
It was like everybody was squished to three-quarter size.
Uh-huh.
Like everybody was kind of stumpy.
I like that. I like that about Phil Bond. And then who was that other guy who drew? Maybe I'm thinking of Phil Bond. It was Queen. He did Queen and Country, the first arc. I'm fine with that as a thing as long as it's consistent. But no,
it's just everyone looked kind of like they were like 4 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
Like there's one point where the broadcaster woman, she puts her arms up on screen. It's like, your arms are way too short. But
I like
it. Kind of bugged me, but he clearly has talent. It's just, yes. he clearly needs to maybe take some life drawing classes and yeah. stuff. Cause the proportions on the bodies were really off, mm-hmm. but clearly has talent.
Did you enjoy it?
It was all right.
Yeah. I think there were things that I liked about it. And for some reason I didn't quit and I thought I kind of want to read what happens next, but I do think that it was, the whole thing was a little, new creator.
There was
an information dump in the middle with middle of your first issue. If you have two or three pages in a row of two talking heads, like, and it's all covered in word balloons, you're doing something wrong.
It's the future. It's Austin, Texas. It's a world where people are born with powers and they're called variants, I think.
Yes. It's very mutant, like, with
yeah, and the whole
words.
Thing was there was a plague in the world. A billion people died, and the guy who's discovered the cure, they found out that the kids born, the people that were cured, had these powers.
Right.
And so, like, I'm like, all right, that's fine.
There's a whole fascism thing going on. Yeah. There's interesting stuff in there. I'm not going to be like, rave review is amazing, but I did find it compelling enough to keep reading, and I think I will probably read the next one.
And there was stuff about the media in the future. Yeah. You know, it's all streaming, and there's the guy who is sort of the beacon of the truth is also just out for money, you know, like, so there was stuff yeah. here that was familiar, but also felt very like, oh, it's like Heroes or like a lot of things that are like, you know, people yeah. with hidden powers. And, but, you know, it's also a love story. There's the male, the woman, the streamer woman has powers, and this guy who shows up, he has powers, and they sort of like each
I liked
other.
Him. He was like the most realistic for me. He's like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. I don't want to stay at your club. And I was like, right.
I didn't dislike it. I didn't dislike it.
Yeah, there was something there. It could first issue, like a pilot or anything, is sort of hit or miss, I think. And it was enough to show maybe there's something there, and they'll get a little better as they keep going.
I'll probably check out the second issue.
Cool.
So that was the books we wanted to talk about. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown, call it the patron pick, as Josh just alluded to earlier. This week, the voting was close. The book that won wasn't even in contention on the first day, which was interesting how the voting went. But the winner ended up being The Question, The Many Deaths of Vic Sage, number one, which is another Black Label book written by Jeff Lemire with art by Dennis Cowan and Bill Sienkiewicz, covers by Chris Sotomayor and Willie Schubert. This is the classic art team for the Question. Although Jeff Lemire, he's not obviously not the classic writer for the Question, but I don't remember if he's written a Question book before. I feel like he might.
It feels like his thing is Silver Age DC, not Silver Age. What is it like?
End
of Silver Age, beginning of Bronze Age, kind of.
Okay.
Like that's what it feels like the 60s, 70s DC. Not like Silver Age, like Superman with a lion head Silver Age, but
right.
Sort of near the end of that. That seems like his bag to me. So when I saw he was doing it, I thought that makes sense. That seems about right. However, I think that when he does that, it seems about right, but it's very rarely that he does it, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found. And another thing I'm sort of realizing is that if you say, hey, Josh, do you like The Question? I will say, oh, absolutely. I think The Question's great. I like the idea of The Question more than I like the reality of The Question, meaning I don't know it that well. I like it when he shows up in things.
Right.
I don't feel like I've ever read, like, when he shows up that I've been like, oh, that is perfect. Like, that is exactly what I wanted out of it. I think we get around the edge of it sometimes, but I don't know that I've read a great Question story. Because I don't know that a lot of people have a real handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I thought, very much evoked the... So there's a lot of Rorschach in here. There was a lot of sort of Steve Ditko in here, I think.
I think that's true to The Question. I've read some Question books, but not a ton.
So instead of sort of being the curious detective like we're seeing over in Event Leviathan and stuff like that, this is a much more what was Steve Ditko's thing?
Objectivism.
Yes, objectivism. I felt there was a lot more of that. There was literally one part where he said "herm," and it wasn't H-U-R-M, but it was
H-R-R-M.
And then the person was like, "Did you say her or something like that?" But they self-referenced the fact that he'd said it, and I was like, "That's you know, because people, maybe you've forgotten this. Rorschach is The Question. That's what Rorschach from Watchmen is, and so that's all sort of tied together. And I liked that as a reference. I liked a lot of this. I didn't love the story. I really loved looking at it. That's where I'm.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I read, I think it was, there's an 80s Question. Yeah, I read that one. That was the Denny O'Neill, Dennis Cowan Question. I read that one, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It came out in the 80s. I didn't read it in the 80s. I think I read it probably like 15 years ago. I don't really remember much about it. I also don't remember how much this fits in, other than it looks similar because Dennis Cowan drew it and Bill Sienkiewicz did the covers. But
that's worth the price of admission.
Right.
It just end of full stop.
I mean, yeah, he's a little bit of a jerk in this.
I liked that.
It's different for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a mystery about some sort of lineage, of course. It's Question lineage. No hero can just stand on their own.
Steve Ditko did create The Question, right? Am I?
I don't know. Maybe. I'll look it up while you keep talking. The art.
Created by writer artist Steve Ditko. I just want to make sure I didn't get that wrong because I think it's important. Yeah. And then I think after he left all that stuff, then Mr. A became his new The Question. And that was super into the objectivism, the Ayn Randian stuff that he was into that was good or bad. You know, and end of the day, did I love reading the story? I couldn't even tell. Right now I'm searching to remember what the story was about.
Well, in the course of other events, The Question comes upon this hole in the ground that has a bunch of skeletons, one of whom has a Question-like mask on with a bullet hole in its forehead. And so then he goes to his old, basically stick character, his trainer, Dragon, and you know, basically Richard Dragon, which is a great name, where he's like, what's the deal with this mask? And he has him drink a tea and, you know, hypnotizes him basically. And, he, you know, at the end of it, he wakes up basically in the Old West. So I don't know. There's, you know, there's stuff going on. The city's burning, and you know, there's trouble and there's rioting because a cop shot two black men, and so he's a Dick Sage in his, you know, secret identity is like a Fox News commentator type, and so that's going on, and then also he's investigating this other situation, comes across this mystery, and now he wakes up in the Old West. So, you know, it was okay. The art was great. There was a couple of really terrific panels in here. You know, Dennis Cowan is clearly there, but also Bill Sienkiewicz is clearly there. That's the best kind of...
I love that. Yeah, that's really good.
...situation. I like the question, and it's a miniseries, so I'll probably read it, unless I really don't like issue two, but I don't like all these characters being parts of lineages, but we'll see where this one's going.
Yeah, I did have that thought, too. Yeah, I forgot about that bit.
And then there was an oblique reference to Victor Zsasz. So I don't know if he's going to be the villain or not.
I did catch that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's going to exist as its own thing over there, they got a chance, but...
I mean, this is a Black Label book, so it's not in continuity. It's off on its own.
Oh, it's Vertigo. It's cool.
It's another Vertigo book, yes. So that's the patron pick. Let's do our ratings, our ratings. Patented ratings. We should patent it. That of 5 stars... 3.5.
It's exactly what I was gonna say. I wasn't upset having to read it.
No, I liked it. I mean, I read it before it was the pick.
Yeah, I was gonna anyway, so.
And sticking with it, I'm gonna read the next issue.
Yeah, probably. Do we know how many it is?
No, it's probably 3. I think these have all been 3 issues.
48 pages. And, yeah, something like that.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. So I toss my iPad to the side. That's where you can go and vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. And before we get to the patron powers, let's take a quick break and talk about a really exciting new podcast. It's called Marvels, and it's based on the classic graphic novel by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. It's an incredible window into the Marvel universe. And so I love that audio dramas are coming back, Josh. The podcast game has brought back the audio drama, and this is an audio drama version of Marvel's. And I listened to the trailer. It was really fun. It was really high quality, and also featured the surprise revelation. I mean, surprise if you haven't known, but that the genius casting of Method Man as Ben Urich.
That's range that my man Clifford has.
I thought it was really well done. I love radio dramas. I love all that. I love the sort of coming back around to the classic storytelling styles and. Well,
I'm gonna say a thing. When I heard this as a thing, I thought, oh, that might not work. And then I started listening to it, and I went, you know what? I'm wrong. Because A, audio drama is fantastic. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of audiobooks and some of the other stuff that, you know, like if it's getting production again. We forgot about that as a thing. Mm-hmm. And I sort of listened to it, and there's real names. And I was like, oh, actually, I want to listen to this. This is actually really cool. And it's a great story for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Marvel's
it's a throwback story. It's an old timey story.
Yeah, but also it's sort of a third party observer story. You know, Phil Sheldon is not Superman. He's watching. You know, not Superman. You know what I mean? He's not the main character. He's observing it, and I think that lends itself well to this kind of thing. So the stuff that's going on in front of his eyes, and also like you know, putting a voice to those characters that we don't really have to worry about what they look like, I think is really fun.
The show takes place in the backdrop of the Fantastic Four's showdown with Galactus, which is timely for this show. And it follows a photographer, a student, a journalist on their mission to investigate a sprawling, superpowered conspiracy theory. The show gets into a level of depth and detail in Marvel that you don't find anywhere else. If you decide you want to give it a listen, the only way to do that is by going to StitcherPremium.com and signing up with the code FAN. You'll get a free month trial of Stitcher Premium, which will let you listen to Marvels right now. That's StitcherPremium.com, promo code FAN. To listen to Marvels. And if you want to check it out, as we mentioned at the top of the show, go to marvelspodcast.com. You can hear the trailer there. It's pretty cool.
It is. And you know, you've listened to me. I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean that. I was like, that's fun. And you can listen to the whole thing. Just sign up. You get a month trial. You know, check it out.
I love that we're going back to the original story, not the original storytelling, because I was just talking around a fire, but basically the original mass media, which was radio drama, which predated movies and predated TV shows. We're back around to it.
And it's such a great medium. It really, you know, we all walk around with little headphones stuck in our ears all the time. And it is, I find it just as immersive, but you can do stuff while you're listening to it.
All right, so let's go back to the patrons and thank the patrons who give the $5 or higher level, patreon.com/ifanboys, where they do that. We thank them by giving them dumb superpowers. And we'll thank Sam Musters first. Sam Musters, his power is that...
I was wondering if you'd gotten it between now and then, but I like that you're just on the ledge right now. Go on.
Sam Musters, when he is doing a handstand, can run faster than any human being on his hands.
Oh, he pulls out of the dive at the last second and comes up with something. Is he faster on his hands than he is on his feet?
Oh, yeah. Like he's the fastest human being in the world on his hands. But on his feet, he's just a regular old jamoke trying to run.
So let's say that he goes to the 1,500-meter dash. He's got Usain Bolt next to him.
Yeah.
He's up on his hands. Also, is that against regulations?
Well, first of all, they wouldn't allow him to run on his hands, but he would smoke Usain Bolt if he was running on his hands.
Wow. If he can learn to catch a football with his feet, he's
made. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Yeah. Nick DeTota. Nick DeTota can always give you a perfect synopsis. We could use him on this show.
You know, Nick, over to Nick.
Quick sentence or two. What happened? This. Boom, back to you. That's what he's good for.
Covered all the notes. Covered all the high points.
He could work for any of the networks or streaming companies to get those little, to write those little bits. Or comic people for the previews. He does perfect synopses. Everything you need, nothing you don't. The perfect little bite. And you'll know whether it's for you or not.
Spiral Tracks. Whether they are he, she, they, it. We don't know who Spiral Tracks is. But they can convert any room they're in into a snow globe.
Okay.
So suddenly you have not real snow, but like fake snow.
Are you underwater?
Falling from the ceiling. No, snow water, but you have the effect. The same effect as the water.
Oh, okay, so you're not encased in glass.
No, but suddenly from the ceiling will fall this fake snow, and it'll have the same effect as if it was in water.
Huh. And does it remain?
Well, eventually it just comes down and goes away.
Okay.
When it hits the ground, it goes away.
Okay, that's fine. I like that. It's delightful.
It's festive.
It is. You want him at your holiday party.
Sure.
Oh!
Ooh!
Corey Burton. Corey... When he sleeps, his mind is out, but his body is taken over by any of the various mid-80s Bill Paxton characters. So it could be Chet. It could be the Aliens guy, Game Over. But any character that Bill Paxton played between 1983 and 1990 will take over his body and roam around until it's time to wake up.
Mm.
You're stewed, buttwad.
So... But Corey is sleeping while this is happening.
Yeah. He still gets all the same benefits of sleep. He doesn't wake up like, oh, what did Chet do last night? It's not like that. But
does he look like Dan Paxton?
No,
John Paxton.
Sounds just like him, acts like him, but still has Corey's body.
Bill Paxton. Why did I say Dan? I met Bill Paxton.
Yeah, I have it on. I
interviewed him.
Taped that.
This is. Early morning medication, Connor.
Private Hudson. Obviously Private Hudson.
Right.
Yeah.
So thank you, Sam, Nick, Spiral, and Corey for being patrons. Patreon.com/ifanboy to get your own power. And we're getting actually close to getting live with the powers. So if you're someone who has waiting for your powers, it won't be that long. And also, if we have skipped you, as it happened with people who have upgraded, as we talked about, you'll probably be happening at the end. And we'll do something. We'll make it nice for you.
Yeah, and then Corey will walk around and say, "I'm Jerry Lambert. You may have seen me in Predator 2."
Game over, man. Let's do some emails. James T. from Delaware says, Been thinking about this for literally 1 hour as I enjoy several adult beverages and watch the Philadelphia Eagles. Are Captain America's wings eagle feathers? And if so, does he have an endless supply to replace the old ones? Also, does Cap know the American bald eagle is endangered? Has he switched to faux feathers?
Well, a couple of things here.
It's not endangered.
The bald eagle is no longer endangered. Our whole childhoods growing up, they were on the edge of extinction, but now can't get rid of the damn things.
Now they're a menace.
Yes.
They were taken off the list, I think, in the 90s. I'm looking it up. But
they're
definitely no longer on the endangered. They're thriving. Our conservation efforts worked. Now they are being hunted because there are too many.
I see them pretty frequently, and it always thinks I think I'm seeing something special, and then I'm like, oh no, they're everywhere. But when we were kids, it was like you didn't see them because they were almost extinct.
So they were removed from the endangered species list in 1995.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's been more than 20 years.
That being said, I think they're much tinier than actual wing eagle feathers on his head. And I never got the sense that those were real wings.
No.
Leads to the question, though.
What are they?
Yeah, exactly.
Are they rubber?
I mean, they'd have
to. Because the movie never really had to deal with that. They just skipped that bit. And then the other movie with Matt Salinger, they were rubber.
I feel like they would have to be flexible for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
Well, here's the question, though. How reinforced is the cowl?
It's got to be somewhat. That's always the question with Captain America is how strong is he? He take a bullet and not, you know, can he?
I feel like it's, I mean, the way I always understood it is that he's just enhanced human. It's almost like, you know, triathlon. Who's three times everything?
Don't bring him
up. I know,
up
but basically, I think of his powers as kind of like that. They're triathlon like.
So he could be shot.
It would hurt, and he could be killed, but he would have a faster metabolism. He would heal faster. He would probably be strong enough to keep doing things, you know, provided it didn't go straight into his heart or something like that.
So I think you'd want a light Kevlar in your helmet.
So I'm guessing
like Batman.
I'm thinking maybe earlier the wings were like a fiberglass sort of thing. Now maybe the wings are more like a carbon fiber kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
They've got to be soft.
You don't want them to be too soft because you don't want him running into battle and having them flap a little.
That's true.
You know, you don't want anybody to catch him with like a still photo of one sort of up and one down. You want
one
them
sagging.
In place.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you also don't, like, he doesn't want to get hit in the head and have it spear his temple.
Oh, I don't know what they are.
It's a good
question. They're not feathers. We know that. They wouldn't survive.
No. No, it would be a bad idea. Maybe they're vibranium.
Unless, like, Namor's feathered wings, they can help him fly. Exactly.
Maybe they're Namor feathers. like he was like, I give this gift to you to put on your head. I don't want your ankle feathers on my head. No, that's good.
But
come back.
You see, if I was writing Captain America, first the page, he'd be flying off giving the salute.
With his head. Just I want you to picture, just close your eyes for a second, and picture Namor standing there in his green man panties,
mm-hmm.
and he takes off using the power of flight from his ankle wings.
It really undercuts the whole tyrannical image.
Yep. I can't stop.
Do Peter see
that? Peter F., I know you're sporadic on Star Wars comics, as am I. However, I've been reading and loving Dr. Aphra since the start, and it struck me the other day, after thinking about it since she appeared in 2015, wow, that's a long time ago, that she's essentially a Constantine analog. Highly skilled in a vague, largely undefined profession, technical archaeology, of dubious morality and almost certain detriment to any friends she makes, totally out for herself and utterly fun to follow. Obviously, I want a Dr. Aphra on-screen appearance. And with Rogue One and The Mandalorian telling other genre stories within Star Wars universe, what would you like to see? That was the question. All that other stuff was only prelude to the question.
What do you think about his Constantine analog?
I think it's actually pretty good. And it might be... I mean, Kieran Gillen created the character. So then you know he's probably fairly steeped in sort of British mainstream comic book traditions, of which Constantine is a big one. There's a lot of elements there that I think that Peter very deftly sort of points out.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I was loving that character in Darth Vader, the series that she appeared in, and then the series while Kieran Gillen was writing it. I fell off when I think it's Simon Spurrier is writing it now. I sort of
her solo book. She still has one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Totally. It's ongoing. She's a great fun character. Now the question being, do I want an on-screen appearance? I'm Connor. You can probably guess my answer on this one.
No.
No.
I think you could get one though, because she is.
Yes.
Fairly popular. They made a toy of her.
And I think that there's a. I think that she would have an appeal to people. Like
I
that.
Think as they branch out, as you said, in Mandalorian type stories, yeah. Set of the fringes of the universe,
I'm
totally
okay
see
with that. I guess I don't want it. I don't actively like. I can't wait. If it was a thing, if it was well done, I'd be cool with it.
You have to give her a different kind of story, though. You couldn't. I don't think you could tell the story that they did in the comics, right? With her being so involved in the main character with the main character.
Well, I mean, like
You couldn't do Darth Vader.
Does set her up to be significant, though. And I think that's one of the things that matters, is that it's really easy to have all that brashness and everything, but, you know, people can just do that on their own. But when you do set her up with Darth Vader, then there's something behind it. And actually, and then you always have the threat of him in the background, which I think is sort of key to her constant motion and her sort of dealing with stuff. Like, I've done that, so I'm not worried about other things. I think the two droids,
mm-hmm.
and then her Wookiee, Black Kyrgyzstan. I forget. I don't know how to spell it. You know, all the, you know what? That would be really interesting, but it also already exists in the comics, and I stopped reading it. Black Kyrgyzstan. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's one of those Kashyyyk words. There's no vowels in it.
Contact@ifanboy.com is where you can email us, Peter and James. Thanks for emailing us in. Those are good emails. And let's, real quick, end of the year is coming up, holiday time. If you need to buy people gifts and things, get many options you can do, not only to help support the show, but buy, you know, make the people in your life happy. Patreon.com/ifanboy, obviously, is where you can go be a patron. Our t-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com, we got many shirts. If you got a friend who is into Watchmen, the TV show, you might be able to find something that maybe is in that vein.
Unrelated.
It's totally unrelated, but also in the vein. That's the needle at threads. You can find that there, ifanboy.com/support. Helps out via PayPal directly if you want to at the end of the year, and also ifanboy.com/Amazon, obviously, where you can find Books Blood books and all kinds of things there. So as the year approaches, the holiday season approaches, those are ways you can help iFanboy. We thank you very much. And let's wrap it up with some upcoming things.
Sure. We're right there on the Books Blood. The Fantastic Four... : Behold, ellipses, Galactus! ! Marvel Select. It's three Galactus stories from the Fantastic Four, and Connor and I are somewhat through them. We're going to record it as soon as possible.
It may not make it into November.
Well, we'll see.
This coming week is the last week of November, and it's holiday week, so it may. It could come out Friday.
We're going to shoot for it, but also, you know, we'll get it. You'll get it. It's going to be good. I think. I tell you what. We've been doing books that just we like a lot, but we don't do it on purpose because we haven't read the last few. Actually, we did, but like this one, we never actually read it. But I'm halfway through it. I go, oh, Connor's gonna like. We're gonna have another one of those shows where we're like, this is also great. That is what's gonna happen here. Except this one has three different teams of creators, and they're all great for different reasons, and it's gonna be super fun to do. So I don't want to rush through the rest of the book and not be able to talk about it. It'll be soon.
It'll be out the next 2 weeks. That's my pledge to you.
Yep.
And so let's talk about the holiday schedule. We talked about this last week, but let's keep talking about it. So for the rest of the year, here's what you got. You have a December patron hangout on December 1st. That's our last hangout of the year. If you're a patron, you can come hang out with us for an hour and talk about nonsense. We talked about Watchmen, and we talked about The Mandalorian last time. Then next – the same day on December 1st will be Pick Week number 711. And I think we're going to have special guest Ryan Haupt on that one. And then Pick of the Week 712 will be on December 8th, and that'll be the last Pick of the Week show of the year. Following week, December 15th, you'll find the All Media Year End Spectacular, our 3 hours plus show on all the things we enjoyed in the year. And then the few days later will be the Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker?
Yes.
I never know the name of it.
I got my tickets.
I have mine too. That will be coming out hopefully soon after the movie comes out, but that'll be coming out sometime before Christmas, and then we take off the rest of the year, and we'll be back with Pick of the Week 713 on January 12th. So that will be that's the year-end schedule.
Excellent planning, my partner. Head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can find out what the Pick of the Week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can get what's going on with the pick. You can get Best of the Week in panels and maybe other things. It depends. It's a free-for-all over there. That's not really true. Mm-hmm. Follow us individually, CSGO Patrick and Jay Flanagan on Instagram as well. And those are places to do those things.
And if you like the show, please consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast, whatever aggregator you use, if they allow those things. Even better than that is to tell your friends, tell people who ask about what podcast do you like. I like comics. We'll listen to the show. That really helps spread the word. We do appreciate that. And with that, we are out.
Boom. Honor. I'm Josh. Thank you so much. Method Man as Ben Urich.
Who would have thought?
Not me. Not Raekwon Jeff. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.